Welcome to the program for Wednesday, May 23rd, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour is Pentagon Solutions. It's our weekly deep dive look at experts on defense issues from both inside and outside the Defense Department. The goal is to give you information that will show you a path to Pentagon Solutions from people who are best equipped and most knowledgeable to provide those answers. And today, the person you'll hear from talking about some challenges the Pentagon is dealing with and potential solutions is Lieutenant General George Flynn, Director of J-7 Joint Staff, speaking at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. The event was called Challenges to Access and the U.S. Response, the Joint Operational Access Concept. And the Center for Strategic and International Studies focusing on this issue on Friday. The Military Strategy Forum hosting General Flynn, and then a panel discussion later after General Flynn's presentation. The panel discussion is featured with a video link at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. General Flynn's presentation will be posted there, too. And throughout the hour, we'll listen to General Flynn as he speaks about the Joint Operational Access Concept. And we begin with the beginning of General Flynn's remarks.
The J-7 is, in its current form, a relatively new organization. It basically stood up 1 August of this year with the disestablishment of Joint Forces Command. And the three main things that are in the portfolio right now are the training of the combatant commanders. So we run the training programs that do the two exercises per year for each of the combatant commands. We also are responsible for the concept development and experimentation piece that used to reside down in Joint Forces Command. And also we have oversight of professional military education. If you take a look at the directorate and what it's responsible for and how it evolved, Joint Forces Command really was the forcing function of jointness. And what I mean by that, it developed the concepts, the doctrine, and the experimentation that led towards the interoperability and integration of the services. And then the force and function, if you will, were the joint exercises that allowed us to come up with joint capability. With the change of doing away with a combatant command, you've now really made the chairman responsible for jointness. So in light of that, that is, you know, the chairman signed the joint operational access concept. Now, to give you one thing about, you know, my relationship with General Dempsey is General Dempsey is he has his graduate degree from Duke University in English. And the first document that we ever gave him to sign from the J-7 was the Joint Operational Access Concept. And the first word in the document was misspelled. All right? I thought I was moving forward when I should have understood that, you know, there's moving forward and then there's the forward to a publication. And many people had read this document ahead of time before we published it, to include me, and I never read the first word, but he did. And so that's now framed in our office, and it's the first thing he ever signed for us, but it's also the first word. So we quickly complimented him on catching the thing we wanted him to catch, and but he wasn't buying that. So I want to thank you all for having me here today. I do not intend to provide you all elements of the concept. I suspect most of you have read the document. And more I want to give you today is the context of how this fits within joint force development. It was published in January this year, but it had been under development for well over a year. So this wasn't something that General Dempsey came into office in October. This had been a work in progress for well over a year. In a perfect doctrinal world, if you want to take a look at the taxonomy of doctrine and how we develop things, we would have published a strategy, we would have worked on the concepts, we would have published the capstone concept for joint operations, then we would have published the joint operational access concept, and then we would have looked for the services to produce their concepts, and then we would have saw the programmatic things. But this is not a perfect world, and that's not working in sequence, nor in this current environment that we're in should it work in sequence. You know, sometimes we have to do things in parallel rather than in sequence. The key document that we're currently working on is the capstone concept for joint operations. And we're due to publish that in July of this year. And that really is how General Dempsey intends to define how the joint force is going to fight in the future. The world in which you live doesn't always give us the luxury to follow our processes, so we'll need to make adjustments. I think as the joint operational concept has already been published, when the capstone concept comes out, we may have to double back and adjust some of the elements in the JOAC, and we're just going to have to be ready for that. A key thing, first of all, is the context of the environment. And I said this earlier this week at a different forum. If you like the complexity, the uncertainty, the increasing danger of today, you're really going to like tomorrow. It's because the strategic environment in which we build is not going to get any simpler, and it's not going to get any less complex. What is going to change, though, are basically two or three things. First of all, the speed at which we have to adjust and the speed that we have to make decisions are going to continue to increase. That's a key element of the environment in which we live. And it's largely driven by the amount of information that's available, the accessibility of that information, and the availability of that information. The other part is that the world is becoming more dangerous just because both state and non-state actors are enabled by technology. In many ways, technology has been democratized. Everybody has access to technology, and that drives a lot of our ways when we develop these capabilities. The other thing that we have to adapt to is a new fiscal reality. Everywhere I go, nobody's writing me a check. And everybody's asking me, whether it's in the combatant commander's exercise program, whether it's in concept development experimentation, everybody's saying, let's just go back to where the funding was last year. And I said, you don't understand. When the deposit was made, it wasn't as big as last year's. So everybody needs to make adjustments to that. When we take a look at the future operating environment, there is going to be clearly a joint force requirement with the ability to create and enable access according to likely missions. These access requirements are not regional or threat specific. All right? But the challenges will include many different things. They'll include geographic impediments to access, whether it's limitations on ports, limitations on airfields. Geography is still going to play a part in our ability to achieve access. Technology-driven capabilities like ballistic and cruise missiles are also going to add part of our access challenges, as well as the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. Cross-domain challenges are also going to occur in increasing time from both your traditional domains, your air, sea, and land domain, to the two new domains of space and cyber. And asymmetric approaches, like small boats in a traditional domain, but asymmetric approaches in a new domain like cyber, are also going to have an impact on your ability to achieve access. The threat will come from both state and non-state actors that are all technology-enabled. Clearly, based on the above, a holistic approach is needed, which means a joint approach is needed. This is why the chairman published the Joint Operational Access Concept, to ensure that the joint force will have the range of capabilities to overcome anti-access and aerial deny challenges in all domains across the full range of potential military operations.
That's Lieutenant General George Flynn, Director J7 Joint Staff, speaking at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. The presentation called Challenges to Access and the U.S. Response, the Joint Operational Access Concept. You're hearing it on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM on Pentagon Solutions Today. More from General Flynn in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files in all these different formats, then 20 years later, somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
The Cloud First Report, presented by the cloud computing experts at GTSI and HP.
A milestone on the federal government's path toward faster security approvals for cloud computing. Agencies that manage the FedRAMP program have named the first batch of third-party assessment organizations that will put commercial cloud products through their paces, making sure those industry offerings comply with FedRAMP's baseline security controls. The program is designed to certify a cloud product once, then let agencies use it several times without having to perform their own security assessments from the ground up.
Public, private, hybrid? The options for moving to the cloud are many, and mandated transition deadlines are right around the corner. Industry leaders GTSI and HP have established a cloud center of excellence in Herndon, Virginia, specifically focused on navigating the cloud options available to agencies and to help you decide on what approach is best for your requirements. Get your head in the cloud. Contact a GTSI HP cloud computing expert and reap the benefits of increased operational efficiency and decreased program costs. Email hpccoe@gtsi.com today.
Conducting the business of government has never been more challenging, as agencies need to make even smarter procurement decisions. Now you can take the direct path to successful acquisitions with GSA's multiple award schedules. GSA makes it easier to get what you need, when you need it, on time and on budget. You'll save time and money by reducing costly delays in purchasing services and products, with the flexibility and control you need to negotiate better pricing. GSA also provides best value through established contracts with pre-qualified vendors and streamlined access to a wide selection of contractors. You can also create blanket purchase agreements to meet your agency's recurring requirements. To find out how GSA's multiple award schedules can help you support your agency's needs, visit gsa.gov/ACQCPM. That's gsa.gov/ACQCPM.
I'm Jared Serbu. Here's some of the stories we're working on for tomorrow's edition of The Federal Drive. We'll hear what the Department of Veterans Affairs is doing to gather information about homeless, medically vulnerable veterans, and as the Defense Department works to create military bases that are environmentally sustainable and responsive to their surrounding communities. We'll talk with DOD's top official for installations, Dr. Dorothy Robine. Those stories and all the latest federal news tomorrow morning from 6 to 10 on The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp, only on Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com.
Profile America, Wednesday, May 23rd. Many things we take for granted in the current U.S. actually had their beginnings in colonial America. Life insurance is one. While sources vary as to the exact beginning date, it appears to be between 1759 and 1761 in Philadelphia. The first known life insurance company was called the Corporation for Relief of Poor and Distressed Widows and Children of Presbyterian Ministers. Given the time and location, it should not be surprising that Benjamin Franklin was involved in setting up the business. Now there are 946 life insurance companies in the U.S., with nearly 300 million policies in force. Profile America is produced by the U.S. Census Bureau, measuring America, people, places, and our economy.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today on Pentagon Solutions, you're hearing Lieutenant General George Flynn, Director J7 of the Joint Staff, speaking at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. The event is from Friday, and the event's called Challenges to Access and the U.S. Response, the Joint Operational Access Concept.
Means by which you're able to link strategy, operational capabilities, and end state. They drive all elements of force development, doctrine, organizational issues, training issues, material solutions, leadership development, personnel issues, and also facilities. They are not just limited to material solutions. Accordingly, the Joint Operational Access concept was designed to provide a common intellectual framework and to establish the basis for all follow-on efforts needed to effectively create joint solutions to the full range of likely access challenges. It also provides a broad operational level capabilities required to maintain and gain access, or to gain and maintain access. Today and tomorrow's strategic environment necessitates for both operational needs and for fiscal reality a joint approach. We can't afford individual service approaches. In developing both the capstone concept for joint operations and the joint operational access concept, there are three common trends. Anti-access and aerial deny capabilities are a growth industry around the globe that are technology-enabled. There is also changing U.S. overseas defense posture, and there's also the emergence of two new domains, space and spot and cyber, which will be contested domains. Common to both the capstone concept for joint operations and the joint operational access concept is the requirement to be able to conduct globally integrated operations across multiple domains in both time and space. This is referred to in the concept as cross-domain synergy. Cross-domain synergy is the complementary, vice merely additive employment of capabilities in different domains such that each enhances the effectiveness and compensates for the vulnerabilities of the other. There is no doubt that our freedom of action will be dependent on our ability to achieve the necessary superiority in one domain or multiple domains at a time and domain of our choosing. This requirement will require integration and jointness at lower levels and potentially increased interdependence among the services to generate the tempo needed for mission success. There are 11 supporting precepts within the concept, and I'm not going to read each one of them to you today because I know you've looked at it. And there are 30 operational capabilities within the concept. All of them flow from the conditions and challenges previously described. And let me just highlight two. One calls for the joint force to identify and exploit domain mismatches in pursuit of the ultimate combination needed to gain the level of access required by the mission. This goes to the heart of cross-domain operations. We may decide to escalate in another domain to be able to gain advantage in another domain. In other words, we're trying to do this in space and time, and we're trying to manage this all at once. Another one suggests that the notion of us having uncontested superiority in all domains is likely coming to an end, and that we're going to have to fight for domain superiority. So it will therefore be necessary to create superiority in separate domains in time and space in order to get the overall superiority to accomplish the mission. The precepts and operational capabilities cover the full range of capabilities from engagement, where you start to build the partnerships that are going to be needed to lay the foundation for some of your access challenges around the globe, and to set the conditions for future access to the ability to exercise mission command in order to maneuver in multiple domains to create opportunity. Another key part of the joint operational access, and one of the papers that's going to inform the future here, is the mission command paper. Mission command could very well replace command and control as one of the warfighting functions. All right, so we may even take what we referred to as command and control, and one of the things we're considering is looking at making that mission command. Now, mission command clearly has two aspects to it. It has the aspect of the art of command, which is the human element, the leadership element, and it also has the science of command, which is the technical means to be able to do it. It is all about empowering individuals at the right level of strategic, operational, and the tactical levels of war to be able to be empowered to operate on intent, and it requires trust up and down the chain of command to be able to do it. You have to be able to do mission command in the future if you're going to be able to operate at the speed of the problems of which we're going to face. The precepts and operational capabilities contained within the Joint Operational Access concept cover the full range of capabilities. Again, they go from engagement all the way to high-end technical capabilities. These also form the basis, and they will form the basis for our experimentation in the future and for further on development of supporting concepts and also form the basis for analysis of what capabilities are being brought to the table by the services. It is clear that the flexibility, resiliency, and adaptability required by the environment and also by this concept can only be achieved by a joint approach. The concept will assist in developing affordable solutions by the framing of choices that our new fiscal reality demands. I used to say in my last job when I was at Quantico, I'd go into an audience and I'd say, you can have anything you want, just ask. And everybody put a big smile on their face. And then I'd say, but you can't have everything. You're going to have to make choices. Unfortunately, for about the last 12 years, we have a mindset, if you will, of which we didn't have to make choices. You know, if you wanted something, we basically could afford it. The new fiscal reality is going to require us to have to make choices. And a good reason or a good purpose behind all the documents and all the discussions that we're having right now is trying to set the framework to enable decision makers to make decisions. Because, like I'm saying here, it's all going to be about choices. You cannot afford everything. And to think that you can is just kicking the can one more bit down the road. Recognize two things. As we work through these concepts, the other reason why we want to provide this framework is we're never going to get the future 100% right. So if we envision there is the world that we would like it to be, and there's the world that's going to happen. So we're never going to get it 100% right. We can't afford to be 100% wrong. So how do you build the resiliency into this force? How do you build the broad range of capabilities into a joint operational access concept that is not unique to a specific situation? And if that specific reality doesn't happen, how do you ensure that you have the resiliency and the flexibility to adjust to what didn't turn out the way you wanted it to be? Lastly, as we move forward into the uncertain and increasingly dangerous post-OEF world characterized by rapid change and the democratization of threatening technologies, we will need to ensure that we can operate at the speed of the problem. We will need to be able to create the understanding needed to make the right decisions faster than our adversary. And this is another concept that we're working on, is the co-creation of context. You know, how do you take information from the bottom, from the side, from the top down, and be able not only just to push data, but to be able to create knowledge at the point of action? This means that the human dimension will remain the foundation of our success, and that our leaders enabled by technology will be the core of our future warfighting capabilities. And I believe that's why when you take a look at the joint operational access concept, that's why we laid out 11 precepts and 30 capabilities of which we needed to explore. So the document wasn't an end in itself. The document was designed to be able to inspire further concept development, experimentation, and analysis needed to be able to link our strategic goals with the ends desired to achieve, and it was designed to fit in the middle to come up with the ways to be able to do that. So I just wanted to talk to you briefly about that, and I wanted to leave the majority of the time for you to ask questions, because I figured that's what you really wanted me here for.
That's Lieutenant General George Flynn. He's Director J7 of the Joint Staff, speaking at a CSIS event, Center for Strategic and International Studies event, called Challenges to Access and the U.S. Response, the Joint Operational Access Concept. And as you heard General Flynn say, he'll take some questions from the audience. You'll hear some of those when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Did you know you can streamline data center operations with Cisco UCS from GovConnection, or that GovConnection can help you control costs through cloud computing with Cisco Unified Data Center Solutions? You can also encourage government telework through real-time high-definition video collaboration with Cisco Telepresence from GovConnection. Call GovConnection, a Cisco Gold certified partner, to learn more at 1-800-800-0019. GovConnection, 1-800-800-0019, because Gov is all you need.
Join the United States Geospatial Intelligence Foundation for GeoInt Community Week, June 4th through 8th, featuring classified and unclassified workshops, demonstrations, exhibits, briefings, and networking opportunities. USGIF's GeoInt Community Week is a great opportunity to learn more about the GeoInt issues affecting the defense, intelligence, and homeland security communities. Register and learn more at usgif.org, the United States Geospatial Intelligence Foundation, where our national security begins.
At the Jeep brand, we've been on active duty for over 70 years, in conditions you can imagine and some you can't. And like our soldiers, we never shy away from a challenge. So we'd like to honor our armed forces' outstanding service during the Jeep military event. Get $1,000 total military bonus cash toward a new 2012 Jeep vehicle. After so much time in service to others, we're giving our soldiers the recognition they deserve. Jeep.
Plus, right now, get 0% APR financing on the 2012 Jeep Compass and Jeep Patriot. Offer available to active military, military reserve, retired military, and retired military reserve with honorable discharge and 20 years of service within 6 months of discharge date on a retail purchase or lease. Excludes SRT models. See dealer for details. Financing for well-qualified buyers through Ally Financial. Not all buyers will qualify. Must take retail delivery by 5/31/12. Jeep is a registered trademark of Chrysler Group, LLC.
This month's Federal Executive Forum will focus on secure cloud computing initiatives in the federal government. The panel includes government leaders from DISA and NASA. To access this month's Federal Executive Forum, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword search cloud. That's keyword search cloud on federalnewsradio.com. You do not want to miss perspectives on current challenges and visions from industry and government. Sponsored by Lockheed Martin SafeNet, Brocade, and Emix Group, presented by Trezza Media Group.
Happy without a drink. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Research indicates college students can have as good a time at a party when they don't drink. At the Miriam Hospital in Providence, Rhode Island, Lori Scott Sheldon looked at data on 19 studies involving more than 1,400 college students. Her study found students were less likely to drink alcohol when their beliefs about the positive effects of drinking were challenged. So, Scott Sheldon says,
being aware that it isn't the alcohol that causes the outcomes, but the positive expectancies associated with alcohol, triggered by the social setting, may help you limit or avoid drinking.
She says you also can list what you expect from alcohol and create arguments against the expectancies. The study in the journal Psychology of Addictive Behaviors was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Challenges to access and the U.S. response. The Joint Operational Access Concept, our focus on Pentagon solutions today. Lieutenant General George Flynn speaking at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And in this highlight, he's taking questions from members of the audience about the Joint Operational Access Concept.
To me, you know, warfare and the evolution of warfare has been driven by the competition between offense and defense. And that in this particular case, you could say that American power projection capabilities were offense, and A2AD are a defensive response to that offense. Does that mean that we should be thinking about things like air-sea battle and the JOAC as being another stage of offense in response to this, or refinement of power projection capabilities? How do you put it into this context?
I put in the context in two ways. First of all, I think that the capabilities that are emerging, especially, for example, say, in the cyber domain, are creating a capability inflection point that could be compared to the introduction of the airplane into our war fighting capabilities, or the transition of the battleship to the carrier as the capital ship. So if you take a look at that, those were significant changes that drove capability in the future. So the challenges between now, we're focused on two things. We're focused on building a force out to 2020. And what you're seeing in some of the traditional domains is you're seeing the strength of the defense, I think, enabled by technology. So how do you then look for offensive opportunities in which to counter those defenses? And I believe that where you're going to have to look is into the new domains. And how you integrate those operations across multiple domains is really going to be the key to whether you have an offensive capability or not. And whether you can integrate all these in real time or in the time that's going to be available for your reaction is going to be the success to whether you do it. Right now, a lot of this is just all conceptual. It hasn't been proven yet. It hasn't been exercised. One of the things that we're looking at, for example, on the training side, because not all of this is going to be a material solution. So when you do a COCOM exercise, how well do we add this new environment in cyber, and how well do we exercise to it? How well do we get a common operating picture of what effects you can gain in the cyber world, and how do you integrate them with traditional effects that come in the more traditional domains? But if you take a look at traditional domains, defense always tended to have an advantage. And I think in the future now, what we're trying to do is figure out new ways of seizing the initiative by doing these operations across domains. And conceptually, there's a lot going on. It's not going to happen overnight, and I'm not sure you're going to have a revolution in your requirements. 80% of the force that you're going to have in 2020 is either in existence today or is already programmed to come into existence. So what you can basically do in all this is, as you think through the problem, is you can influence about 20% of it to 2020. And if you take a look at the pace of change, the real question is, how far out can you advance to project this perfect view of the world in which, you know, you can make the choices that you're going to have to make based on the fiscal reality we face? It's not easy. It's complicated. But I think a lot of these concept documents, if you will, are designed to help frame some of those choices.
Thank you. Question. And when you ask your question, there's a mic here. Please state your name and affiliation. Thank you.
Sure.
Right here in front.
Sir, George Nicholson with StratCorp. On Wednesday, there was a terrific session with the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, General Swartz, and the Chief of Naval Operations, General Brenner. There's been a lot of confusion about what the air-sea battle concept is, almost like seven blind men grabbing hold of the elephant. But I think they clearly articulated, and they said, this is not a doctrine, this is not a policy, it'll be in support of your overall doctrine. Can you speak to exactly how that's going to be incorporated into what you're doing?
Okay. I think the key part, if you take a look, and one of the things why I'm mentioning here is the joint operational concept was under development for well over a year. In fact, many of the people that were working on the joint operational access concept, because it had full service representation, were also the same people that were working on the air-sea battlecon. So the two were not created in vacuums. There was actually commonality in action officers and in planning and in senior leaders as they went along. But air-sea battle really takes you, is a mix of a multi-service concept and multi-service programmatic requirements that are designed to support part of the 30 operational capabilities that are included in the joint operational access concept. I don't see any white space between those 30 operational capabilities and air-sea battle. Air-sea battle does support them. Does it support all 30? No. All 30 are designed to get you to a joint solution. They're not necessarily designed just to limit you to the multi-service concepts and programs that are contained in air-sea battle.
Thank you. Next question. Right there, on the
Robert Gard. I retired way too long ago to even have heard the terms until recently, aerial denial and had eye access and so forth. Could you be somewhat specific about the specific kinds of threats? So you look in the newspaper and you see the Chinese are going to be able to kill our carriers and prevent us from supporting Taiwan, for example. Could you talk specifically about what some of these more recent threats are that you're trying to combat?
Well, I think in general terms, first of all, and it's not limited to a specific region of the world or to a specific country. I think one of the challenges that are unique to the to this new environment that we have is that a lot of this technology is going to be available to both traditional state near peer or peer competitors, but also in fewer numbers, it could also be available to non-state actors, which complicates some of your planning as you do this. It can range from cruise missiles, supersonic cruise missiles, and if there's one supersonic cruise missile, I would say that the battle force that's approaching needs to be able to defend against that one way or the other, which is going to, you know, because one's as bad as 10 in some cases. It's going to be the proliferation of ballistic missile defense technology, the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, and also the capability of both states and non-states to operate in the cyber domain. All those things together, you know, are going to create challenges to us in the ability to achieve and to overcome aerial denial strategies. So it's wide ranging. So as we have developed the capability, people have, or the technology has enabled defensive measures to always counter them. So it's not one specific thing. That's why you're going to have to be able to operate across all five domains simultaneously in space and time to seek advantage wherever you can to counter out that. So it would be easy if I could say, okay, this is the one threat, the ballistic missile defense, or the ballistic missile threat is the threat that we have to worry about. It's the only threat. It's not the only threat. It's ballistic missiles, it's cruise missiles, it's anti-air capabilities, it's cyber capabilities. There's a host of problems, so how do you do this? And what we're trying to figure out is how do you take four services, integrate them, and come up with a coherent joint approach to overcome the potentially wide range of threat capabilities.
Speaking at the Center for Strategic and International Studies on Pentagon Solutions, it's Lieutenant General George Flynn, Director J7 of the Joint Staff. The event called Challenges to Access and the U.S. Response, the Joint Operational Access Concept. On Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, one more highlight from General Flynn when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues.
Lives are at stake. You need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Emily Richards, founder and president of Sade Clarity, which provides corporate wellness programs to clients all around the country. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman. To learn more about the firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, AAST, a joint venture of small businesses dedicated to providing the federal government with exceptional services under the GSA Alliance Small Business Contract. Our goal is to team with small, medium, and large IT companies to deliver needed services to the federal government. Please contact us at advancedalliance.com for more information on potential Alliant small business teaming opportunities. That's advancealliant.com.
Public, private, hybrid. The options for moving to the cloud are many, and mandated transition deadlines are right around the corner. Industry leaders GTSI and HP have established a cloud center of excellence in Herndon, Virginia, specifically focused on navigating the cloud options available to agencies and to help you decide on what approach is best for your requirements. Get your head in the cloud. Contact a GTSI HP cloud computing expert and reap the benefits of increased operational efficiency and decreased program costs. Email hpccoe@gtsi.com today.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and or complex and or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
You know, choosing how you listen to radio is important. If you don't visit HDRadio.com, you won't learn about the new local HD2, HD3 radio stations. If you don't hear the new local HD2, HD3 stations, you won't hear everything you should. If you don't hear everything you should, you won't understand what your friends are talking about. To understand what your friends are talking about, visit HDRadio.com to learn about HD radio receivers like the Pioneer DEH44 HD, now only $120 at Walmart.
For those dedicated to outstanding public service, meeting the expectations of the American people in an increasingly complex world is a challenge. But with smart programs, people, and performance management, government employees are the epicenter of positive change. The Performance Institute presents the 12th Annual Government Performance Summit, June 18th through 20th at the Marriott at Metro Center. Learn how to create the future for government leadership, measurement, and a motivated workforce. Space is limited. Register now at governmentperformance.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. On Pentagon Solutions today, Lieutenant General George Flynn, Director J7 of the Joint Staff at an event hosted by the Center for Strategic and International Studies called Challenges to Access and the U.S. Response, the Joint Operational Access Concept. And in this highlight of the presentation, General Flynn taking some questions from members of the audience.
Thank you, General Flynn. Sandra Irwin with National Defense. I wanted to ask you about the NATO allies' role in air denial operations. I mean, what specific responsibilities do you foresee for allies? Do you expect them to provide any technology, to provide access, bases? Can you talk maybe specifically what you will be expecting from allies in the future?
I think a key to the capstone concept for joint operations is development partnerships. And one of the risks that we have already identified as we've worked the capstone concept to where we are today is what happens if our partners aren't able to network. So I think partnership is, and it's not just limited to NATO, it's going to be limited to allies around the world, is what do you do before there's a conflict to enable the accesses or to enable the capabilities that you could need when you had to respond to a crisis. That's why part of those 30 operational requirements in the JOAC include engagement activities designed to help you build partnerships, designed to help you build capability and capacity by exercising with potential partners so that when you need them, you're ready to partner and you're able to generate the capability and capacity to meet the challenge. I think also by having a concept like this, were able to work through the issues of how do you divide labor, if you will, or how do you define how much capability and capacity you need to have individually, and how much capability and capacity you need to have as partners or as part of an alliance. So, again, the framework's in here, but the answers aren't completely fleshed out yet. So I think building partnerships, deciding what capabilities and capacities everybody will bring to the table, and then how do you integrate them is going to be key to this. And in the capstone concept for joint operations, the key challenge is, do you have the ability to integrate this? Do you have the ability to integrate your command and control systems, the technical backbones that you have to be able to integrate the operations in real time?
Hi, thanks for being here. Mike Fitzsimmons from the Institute for Defense Analyses. In the JOE Act document, one of the risks that's identified toward the end is the potential that the concept may be logistically unsupportable, and it discusses, first of all, the extensive threats to whether they be fixed bases or resupply at sea or tankers, combined with the fact that it's difficult to come up with convincing ways to mitigate this vulnerability beyond sort of incremental improvements in the efficiency of our systems. So my question is maybe how worried should we be about this, or perhaps more specifically, at what point does this start to look like a risk that fundamentally undermines the concept as opposed to something that's manageable?
Well, one of the reasons why in both the Joint Operational Access concept and in the CCJO, where we've identified what we think potential risks are, is so that up front we have an idea of what we should be wargaming and what we should be analyzing in the further development of the concept and the requirements. Because if you didn't identify that, I think you could assume, you know, a plan that has bad assumptions tends not to execute well. So are there assumptions that we're making in the development of this concept? You know, are the logistics going to be there? We all believe that in the future, in the capstone concept, what we are talking about in the future is that the force is going to have to be more dispersed. Okay, so what does that mean? And what does that mean for our logistics aspects of this? What does it mean by how we do logistics? And how do we sustain the force? So you have to start with the concept. I'm not telling you that if you did all 30 operational capabilities, you followed the 11 precepts, that we would have figured out, we would have had the perfect idea for how we're going to fight in 2020. There is much needed development, further development of the concept, and experimentation needed to see, you know, where are the fault lines, or where are the potential failures within the concept. We haven't gotten that far yet. You know, the first step was getting the concept out. But you're absolutely right. If we don't train to this, if we don't experiment with this, we're not going to know if we're going to have the confidence that we need to execute it when we have to.
I'm Harlan Ullman. George, good to see you, and thanks for your comments. I want to shift the focus a little bit away from systems, concepts, and force structure to what I think is one of the really most important aspects, and that's education towards a knowledge-based force. And in your professional military education hat, how do you see refocusing the knowledge and learning and educational structure to support new concepts in what you describe as a far more complicated world? Some time ago, I did a study for the Secretary of the Navy and proposed a revolution in naval education, which did not go as far as it might. And I wondered what your view and the chairman's view are of the future for professional military education and how you intend to see it change, if at all.
Well, the easy part of that is that I know that the chairman believes in the professional development of the force. In fact, one of the other papers that he published was the Profession of Arms White Paper. And he's also published a reading list, which covers the gamut of thinking about the future, traditional warfighting books on traditional aspects of warfighting, but also thinking about the future. The emphasis in the future is going to be on the human element and the development of the leaders to be able to operate at the speed of this environment. One of the advantages we have going in is we have a very experienced force right now that has had 12 years of conflict. But what we have to be able to do is how do you take advantage of that 12 years of conflict, the ability that they demonstrated to deal with uncertainty and complexity in irregular warfare, and how do you expand that to a more complex and uncertain world that is not going to just be limited to irregular warfare, that could have potentially a peer competitor or a near peer competitor thrown in. It could have state and non-state actors. So how do you do that? And I think it's going to be, the core is going to be emphasis on the education of this next generation of leaders to think outside their comfort zone, to think towards the future, and to teach them at some times to be able to think the unthinkable. Because one of the ways that we're going to get to the future is to be able to anticipate the unexpected, and I believe that the educational foundation of getting people to be able to think rather than us to train them for a specific outcome is going to be key. So how much that requires that we take a look at the JPME institutions, I'm not sure yet, but it is another one of the core elements that the chairman has us working on, and I think you'll see that the next ideas behind that come out probably in August or September.